Thank you all for coming, and thank you for inviting me to share some Torah with you this evening. So nice to see all of you. We are going to be doing Pirkei Avos, so let's begin with the first parak of Pirkei Avos. I'm not really sure exactly how to do it. Like, do we give an overview of the parak, or do we just go Mishnah by Mishnah and see how far we get? So one of the things when I was thinking about, you know, this time slot, I'm free this time slot, and that's why I'm giving this shir. But I didn't cheshbon that I don't really have any other free moments during the day on Thursday to actually prepare this shir. So this will be more of like a chabura style. You know, we'll try to learn it together, figure it out together. No one actually has a text in front of them, but okay, I'll tell you what the... Some of you do, some of you have a... Yeah. Okay, everyone's got a notebook, so maybe you'll write down the words as I say them. So we'll start with the first Mishnah, because that's where you're supposed to start. Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph of Pirkei Avos. So it says in the Mishnah, Moshe Kibel Torah mi Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah from Sinai, which is right away a very striking formulation, because if you were formulating it, then what would you say? How would you say Moshe Kibel Torah mi Hashem? He wasn't a Kibbutz Torah Misinai. There is no Kibbutz Torah Misinai. So why is the Kibbutz Torah Misinai? So it occurs to us that maybe there's something that Sinai represents that is a prerequisite for Kabbalah HaTorah, that's necessary in order to be Mekabel the Torah. So what do we know about Sinai? What does Sinai represent? So there's that which we learned already when we were probably in preschool or at least early elementary school. Why was Har Sinai chosen of all the mountains? It was the most humble one. Anyone ever stop to think about that doesn't make any sense, you know, that mountains are neither humble nor arrogant, but they represent to us what seems like humility. Meaning, if mountains were all, you know, participants in a Disney movie, this one would not be the arrogant, braggadocious mountain. It would be the one that's humble and that gets picked on by all of his friends in school and that says, I'm going to show them. And then, you know, clearly it's that's the way we're supposed to feel when we look at Har Sinai. So right away, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, we're told about the very first yesod of a person being able to achieve in Torah. It also sets the tone for what seems like for the Masechta, because this is the very first line in the Masechta. So if we don't know what Pirkei Avos is supposed to be about, which from the title you can't really tell what it's supposed to be about, right? Pirkei Avos, chapters of the fathers, what exactly is it about? So if the first line sets the tone, what's the topic of the Masechta, assuming you don't know what's written in here yet. Let's assume you forget all of what's written in here. What's the topic? What's it setting us up for the topic? Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai.
Telling me about the Mesorah.
It's telling me about the Mesorah, or it's telling me about Torah, or the Mesorah of Torah. Right? It's something along those lines. Now put on your yes, I do know hats. Now, I've learned Pirkei Avos before. What's Pirkei Avos really about? Is it really about the Mesorah HaTorah? How many Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos are about the giving over of the Torah? Not too many. And even right here in the first parak, there's not that much. What we have is teachings of different chachamim of different generations. But it seems that we're supposed to be looking through this Masechta to see how we find the Mesorah HaTorah. What Mesorah HaTorah means is the ability to latch onto Torah, the ability to connect, the ability to find meaning in our lives, to connect back to generations, to connect through all the generations. So we're supposed to find that in the Masechta. So right away, the first thing the author of the Mishnah is doing is giving us glasses with which to look at this Masechta. It's saying, look at this Masechta as Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. But point number one is that it was Kibel Misinai, not Me Hashem. Why is it Misinai? So one possibility, because Sinai represents humility. And if one wants to achieve in Torah, the very first and most important midah that they could have is the midah of humility. Every great Torah leader has achieved their greatness not despite of, but because of their humility. In fact, particularly when it came to those who were moser the Torah to us. What do I mean moser the Torah? Who are the people that were most responsible for giving the Torah? Not just for excelling in learning Torah, but for actually giving over Torah? Well, there's Moshe Rabbeinu, right? He gave us Torah Shebichsav. Any other important figures in history that gave us some section of Torah that we otherwise would not have had? So you have the Mishnah. Who gave us the Mishnah? It's Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. What do we know about Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu, the Chumash itself describes that he's Anav Mikal Adam, that he's the most humble of all people. And what do we know about Rabbi Yehuda Anasi? That he was the most humble. Mishameis Rebbe, the Mishnah says at the end of Masecha Sota, when Rebbe died, Batla Anava. There was no more humility in the world. Rebbe was the last of the great humble people. Ravina and Ravashi, Ravashi in particular, are the ones that gave us the Gemara. Ravashi, also the Gemara tells us, was the most humble. So it's not just that it happens to be one of the great midos that you'd expect for great people and for Gedolei Torah. It's a prerequisite that if you're going to be a Moser HaTorah, you're going to be someone that gives the Torah, one needs to be humble. Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, from the sense of humility. That's what the Gemara tells us in Maseches Tainis, that Torah is compared to water. Why is Torah compared to water? If you ever have a leaf in your house, I guess you don't, because if you would, it would have been exposed today with all the rain. But if you ever have a leak in the house, it will all come through one spot. But let's say it would come through the ceiling over there, let's say. I know it's not going to happen, whatever. But let's say it would come through the ceiling over there. Does that mean that the hole in the roof is right above there? No, what you'd have is a roofer would come over and he's going to find the hole like 30 yards away. He's going to find it somewhere else. How in the world did the water get from the hole over there to come through the leak over there? Because what does water do? It always goes to the lowest point. And it finds that lowest point, that's where it gathers, and that's where it starts dripping through. The Torah is compared to Mayim, the Gemara in Titus tells us, because just like Mayim always finds the lowest point, Torah also always finds the lowest point. Lowest over here representing humility, that the Torah always finds the most humble person. The Balatanya and Likutei Amarim in Parak Dalet has a different explanation of what it means that Torah is like water and that it goes to the lowest point, and that is that he suggests that Torah is something so spiritual, so ruchani, so connected to Hashem. He describes the Torah as being part of Hashem, it is Hashem, that it's impossible for us to really understand Torah in its pristine form. But Hashem wanted to expose us to His essence, to be able to understand His essence. How does He do that if His essence is something that's so beyond us? So He allowed the Torah to go through sort of a metamorphosis, where it gets like, the mashal, if you were to take a baby that's just learning to eat solid foods, and you give the baby a carrot, you know, a big carrot, say, here, what would the baby do with that carrot? He'd chew on it, throw it around a little bit after he realized he's not getting anywhere. He can't eat the carrot. So what do we do with the carrot? All babies eat carrots. That's right, it's one of the more common baby foods. Even adults eat carrot muffins that are made with baby carrot food, right? So they all eat carrot. What did they do with the carrot? What did they do? It's the same carrot. They just pureed it. They just totally pulverized it and made it something that's digestible. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Torah, which we couldn't possibly digest. It's so beyond our ability to digest. And says the Balatanya in the Likutei Amarim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Balatanya, was the first Lubavitcher Rebbe in Chabad, they call him the Alter Rebbe. That's how they refer to him. The Alter Rebbe says that they took the first, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Torah, which is so beyond us, and he pureed it. He allowed it to go down, lamata, to go down like water goes down. He allowed it to go down to the lowest level it can go down while still maintaining its essence, its pureed carrots, so that we can digest it. So that's a different interpretation of that Gemara in Tainus. But again, interpretation number one, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, means possibly that Moshe Rabbeinu was Mekabel Torah from the fact that Sinai represents humility, from the fact that he was the most humble of all people, and we find that in each and every generation. If you know anyone that ever met Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the first words out of their mouth when they describe him is humility, which is it's astonishing, because as far as his Torah knowledge, he wasn't like slightly bigger than the other people in his generation, and they were great gedolim in his generation, but it was understood, everyone knew it, that he was what they call Mishichmo Lamaila, he was head and shoulders above everybody else in his generation in Torah knowledge, in Torah mastery. And yet, the first thing people think of when they think of Rav Moshe is humility, because they go hand in hand. I think there's another thing about Sinai. And this one doesn't get as much attention. Right? When we're young, we're told about the humility of Har Sinai, that was humble, and that's why it got the Torah. All the big mountains were saying, I shouldn't be the one to get the Torah. But there's something else about Har Sinai. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us. The Gemara tells us that Sinai is from a lashon of sinna, of hatred. Even though sinna, you may be thinking, is with a shin or sin, and Sinai is with a samach, yeah, but you know. The Gemara says, assumes that they sound similar enough. That Sinai, says the Gemara, it's called Sinai because misham yarda sinna li olam. That from Har Sinai, that's where hatred came into the world. Meaning, where was anti-Semitism born? How did anti-Semitism start? You ever wonder, why do they hate us? What do we do? How is it possible that an entire body of nations from throughout the world get together just to pick on Israel? Right? How's that possible? They do almost nothing else other than pick on Israel in terms of the numbers and the attention that we get. How is that possible? How is it possible that what did we do already? So the Gemara tells us, Misham Yarda Sinna Liyola. It was from Har Sinai that Sinna came down to the world. Why did Sinna come from Har Sinai? Possibly because it represented the concept of Am HaNivchar, that we were chosen to get the Torah, and there's a sense of jealousy that comes with that. Possibly because if you pass up a great opportunity and someone else takes advantage of that opportunity, the first guy that I was just reading a book called Think Again by Adam Grant. So Adam Grant is a very successful psychologist. He teaches at Wharton, and he's a best-selling author of, I think, 3 or 4 New York Times bestsellers. He wrote Give and Take, which is his best book. He wrote Outliers, I think. No, Originals. Outliers of Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote Originals, and he wrote this book called Think Again. Brilliant, brilliant guy. And he writes that when he was a freshman in Harvard, he thought of the idea, before his freshman year even started, he thought of the idea of creating, before the concept existed, a social media network. And he got 20% of the Harvard freshman students within the college to sign up, and they had them together on this network, and then they got busy with schoolwork and they just sort of dropped the idea. And then 5 years later, another Harvard freshman came along and started exploring that same idea. And Mark Zuckerberg ended up with Facebook, and Adam Grant said, every day he questions, why didn't I just see it through? Why didn't I follow it through? It turns out it was a pretty good idea, But he thought, oh, we're all on campus now. What do we need it for anymore? He didn't see the possibilities of it. That if a person didn't passed up a great opportunity, and then someone else took advantage of that opportunity, I would bet every time Adam Grant sees Mark Zuckerberg, he wants to strangle him just a little bit, right? He probably just has that little bit of sin. So wait a second, because Misham Yarda Sinna Liolam, because hatred came from Har Sinai, that's Moshe Kibel Torah? Moshe Kibel Torah from Sinai, from anti-Semitism? How do we receive Torah from anti-Semitism? I would think anti-Semitism is an impediment to the study of Torah. It holds us back from Torah. The Holocaust was the greatest act of anti-Semitism in the entire history of the world. And it destroyed so much Torah. I just gave a shiur this past Sunday about someone by the name of the Debre Tzina Rav. Debre Tzina Rav was an enormous Talmud Chacham, a Hungarian Talmud Chacham who lived in, Debrecen before the war, but then in Borough Park. And his brother was a major Rav in Australia. Debre Tzina Rav wrote a sefer called Tshuvas Be'er Moshe. His brother wrote a sefer called Tshuvas Betzela Chachma. Both of them Gaonim, absolute geniuses, who really produced a great deal of Torah scholarship for the world. And they were among the Gedolei Torah. And I was reading about his life, and it turns out there were 5 brothers. And they were all, before the war, and they were all known as the Iluyim, the genius Stern boys. He was Rav Moshe Stern, his brother was Bezalel Stern, but 2 of them survived. And you just think about it, that's one family, where there were 5 of them that could have all been like that, and 2 of them survived. How much Torah was lost? Aside from the fact that the Mesorah was lost, that there are so many families that don't even know what their Minhagim are, because there was that inability to pass on the Mesorah, I would think we're not Mekabel Torah Misinai, that we almost lose the Torah because of Sinna. But perhaps what the Mishnah is telling us is that Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, that in one of the more important elements of being able to achieve in Torah is not only a sense of humility, that we discussed already, but a sense of Jewish distinctiveness. That we should remember that a Jew is different than everybody else. And what separates the Jews from everybody else is that we have the Torah. Morasha ki hilas Yaakov, al tikri morasha ela ma'orasa, the Gemara tells us, that it doesn't just mean it's a heritage, but it's like ma'orasa, like erusin. What does erusin mean? That it's a sense of marriage, that we're married to the Torah. And what happens at erusin when a chassan gives a kala the ring, right? What happens at that very moment? They can't yet go home together when he gives the kala the ring. They're not fully married. They're only partially married. So in what way are they married if they can't go home together? What happens at that moment? Are you familiar halachically what exactly happens? Mekudeshes. The Edom say Mekudeshes, right? But what does that mean, that she's Mekudeshes? It used to be they would do that a year before. They would say the seven brachos and they would go home together. There was a year of a gap in between when they were Me'urasa, when there was Erusin, and when they would actually be married. What happened? What was... If they didn't live together, they didn't start a family, they didn't... So what... She was still in her parents' house, he was still in his parents'. What happened? So what happened is she becomes an Eshes Ish. What does it mean she becomes an Eshes Ish? Now she's with another man, that's adultery. Because she's married to him vis-a-vis her relationship with the rest of the world. Prior to that Erusin, she's a free agent. If one guy really likes her, but then another guy swoops her off her feet and impresses her and takes her, so good. So then that guy takes her, and the first guy loses, and there's nothing he can do about it. But once she has Erusin, she's usher to the entire rest of the world. She is designated specifically for this one person. Torah is Al Tikri Marasha Elema Urasa. Torah has Erusin with Klal Yisrael, with the Jewish people. Torah is designated for us. And that's why the halacha is that non-Jew is not allowed to learn Torah. There are major shailas about people who teach Torah classes in universities, in secular universities. Are you allowed to teach if there are non-Jews in the classroom? There are major tshuvas written on this topic. What if you're teaching someone, you're teaching in a non-denominational school or something for kids, and half the kids, recognize patrilineal descent, and their father is Jewish, the mother's not Jewish, there are a bunch of non-Jewish kids in the class. Are you allowed to teach them Torah? These are major questions. Why? Because the Torah is designated for Klal Yisrael. That's Sinai. Sinai, what Sinai did through it made the Torah ours. It made the Torah ours to the exclusion of everybody else. That brought about a certain sense of anti-Semitism, because everybody else was given the chance. We know the Medrash. The Medrash tells us Hashem offered it to the Bnei Esav, the Bnei Yishmael, and all the different nations of the world. And each one said, Maksivba, what does it say in it? Until I know what it says in it, I'm not going to accept the Torah. And they all passed it up. And Klal Yisrael said, Nasa v'nishma, and we took it. And so we're Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, I guess he is Jewish, so we are. But, we're is he? I think he is, right? His mother's Jewish? I don't know. But anyway, so we took it. So there is a sense of anti-Semitism, but it's more than that. In order to maintain Jewish distinctiveness, there are two ways we could do it. We could do it by learning Torah and connecting to the Torah, observing the mitzvahs. Or if we fail to recognize our own distinctiveness, the nations of the world will remind us of it. And we've seen this time and time again throughout Jewish history. Whenever it is that we fail to recognize our own uniqueness, our own distinctiveness, the nations of the world were quick to remind us of how distinct and how different and how unique we are, usually through anti-Semitism. Misham yarda sina li'olam. And that therefore inspires us to go back to Torah and to do tshuva and go back to our ways of learning, of connecting with Hashem. So again, so far we read four words in the Masechta. Moshe kibbutz Torah misina, and just to summarize what we said, why is it that he was mekabel Torah from Sinai? I would think that he was mekabel Torah from Hashem, not from Sinai. And the answer seems to be twofold. First of all, humility. Sinai represents humility. And in order to achieve in Torah, one has to be humble. And second, Sinai represents anti-Semitism. And in order to achieve in Torah, a Jew needs to remember that we're distinct, we're different from everybody else. And that comes either in the form of anti-Semitism or in the form of our own recognition and our own commitment to being different, to standing out, and to living with a sense of responsibility. It's important to realize that when we talk about chosenness, when we talk about the Am HaNivchar, it is not like some version of being a white supremacist, Chas V'Shalom, or something like that. There's something very different between the concept of Am HaNivchar and the concept of being superior to others, that people have a sense that they're greater than others. Because the concept of Am HaNivchar means that we've been chosen to have extra levels of responsibility, right? You know, the old Yiddish joke, I don't speak Yiddish, so I don't really know how the joke goes, but something along the lines of, stop choosing us already, God. You've chosen us enough. Just leave us alone already. Every time we're chosen to be the victims of the Holocaust. We're chosen to be the victims of the Inquisition. We're chosen to be... Enough choosing already. Just leave us alone. But the chosenness represents being an Orla Gayim. It represents a responsibility that we have, a responsibility toward humanity. And that's what the chosenness really really means. It's responsibility more than privileges. Nevertheless, that's I think maybe a little bit of what this means. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. There is a famous comment of the Bar Tanura on these four words as well, where the Bar Tanura writes that the whole book of Pirkei Avos, since we know the topic, right? The whole topic is about midos. It's about how to be a nice person and a good person and a fine person and a productive person, right? It's all self-improvement. It's a Musar Sefer, Pirkei Avos. So it's an odd way to start a Musar Sefer, Moshe Kibel Torah miSinai. So the Bar Tanura makes the comment that it's highlighting to us that the midos that we have are also Torah-based. Meaning a lot of times one can think, that's midos are something that's I can figure out by my own sense of ethics and morals, and what my moral compass tells me is ultimately what it means to be a good person. So the Mishnah starts off by telling us, no, your own sense of ethics and morals are very often a function of whatever the current climate that you grow up in is. Meaning even within a particular year, let's take the year 2021. The sense of ethics that one has of what's right and what's wrong and what's fair and what's good in, let's say, Saudi Arabia is probably very different than it is in San Francisco, right? The sense of what's right and what's wrong in different parts of the world and certainly in different times throughout history is very, very different. Moshe Kibel Torah miSinai tells us our sense of midos, our sense of what it means to behave properly is based in the Torah itself, and the Torah is timeless. The Torah is not bound by any particular time or place. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik once commented that we can't write a new Ani Mamon, there are only 13 Ani Mamons, but if he could, if he was able to write, he had this dramatic way of speaking, so he would, most people would just say, I believe in the following idea, but he said, if I could write a 14th Ani Mamon, my 14th Ani Mamon would be Vayihi ben Sora Aron. That the Torah can travel anywhere, that the Torah can go to any time, any place. You know what they used to call America in like the 1930s? Jews in Europe used to refer to America. Are you familiar with the term? What would they refer to America as?
The Golden Medina.
Oh, the Golden Medina was one. It's true. But that was like the aspirational, right? I go to America, I could be a movie star, and I could throw my tefillin overboard. And people used to do that. They'd throw their tefillin overboard when the boat got close to America because you give up religion, and that's the Golden Medina. And you chase money, the American dream. But the religious people in Europe, the very religious people in Europe, what they refer to America as? They refer to it as the Midbar. What's a Midbar? It's desolate. It's a desert. It's nothing. Because there's no Torah in America. And the assumption was there never could be. And that was the attitude. If someone would go to America, if someone would move to America, they'd be like, oh, there goes their frumkeit. There will never be Torah in America. And outside of Israel right now, obviously, it's not even close, the United States is the greatest center of Torah learning in the world, outside of Israel, of course. So America is not a midbar. Nothing is a midbar. There's no place that Torah can't go and be adapted to and thrive in. That's Torah. Moshe Kibel Torah miSinai. Torah is going to be our guide in every place that we go, in every time throughout history. Okay, so let's move beyond the first four words because it's already almost 9:30. So Moshe, let's try to get one Mishnah done over here. Moshe Kibel Torah miSinai, umesara liYoshua, and he gave the Torah to Yoshua. And this is the first transmission of Torah from Rebbe to Talmud. And this is so critical because that's how Torah gets transmitted from one generation to the next. It's not just a book that someone's going to pick up years later and study. It's something that has to be transmitted from person to person, from generation to the next. It's one of the downsides of all of the Torah that's available on the internet is that very often people don't have a relationship with the people that they learn Torah from. And it's not the same Torah if you're not getting it through a relationship with the person that you're learning Torah from. In fact, I find a lot of times, I have some shiurim on the internet, so sometimes when people will listen, they'll send an email after a while just to connect, just to let me know who they are. I've been listening to your shiurim for this amount of time, this is where I live, just to, a couple of questions, just to connect, because we recognize it, we feel it, that when we learn Torah from someone, it's not enough to just kind of learn Torah from the person. I need to connect with the person. Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah to Yeshua. There was the first one, Rabbi the Talmud. It's also something fascinating to me, because look at what the rest of Yeshua is. Kenim is Kenim Leviim, Leviim is Israel, Anshei Knesset Gedolah. By the end of the Mishnah, a few steps in, Torah is everywhere. Right? It starts with one person, and the one person gave it to one person. And then it's everywhere. It just exponentially grows and it spreads. And a lot of times, you know, you'll have a positive conversation with someone, maybe someone younger than you that you're able to have a positive influence on. And you think, you know, okay, I helped that one person. Very often it's not just that one person. That one person represents so much more. You don't know what that one person could turn into. But that one conversation, that one bit of inspiration, what that could mean, how that could impact so many others. Moshe Rabbeinu, I think they say, I forgot which, I think it was Rosh Shlomo Hyman, was a Rashiv and Tar Vidas. I think they say the story that it was a terrible, terrible snowstorm, and he came to say a shir in the yeshiva, and there was only one boy there. And he went through his whole theatrical presentation like he was talking to a room with 300 people in it. And he was going through the whole shir. And the Talmud was like, this is like weird. You know, he's like, there was no Zoom. He wasn't even doing it for the Zoom. He's like, they're like, what is going on over here? So the Talmud's like, you know, Rebbe, like, you can calm down. It's just, you know, just me and you. It's not just me and you, he said. It's me and you and your children and your grandchildren and anybody that you're going to come in contact with. You know, that's the way Torah works. Here it is. He gives it to Yeshua. Yeshua is a Kenan. Zakenim means not just old people. Gemara tells us in Maseches Kiddushin that we have another word for old people. Seva is an old person. Saba, right, is an older person. But Zakenim means is a matrikum. It's an abbreviation for Ze Shekana Chachma. That it's Zekana, the person who's acquired wisdom. And what's wisdom? How do we define wisdom in Judaism? So we have a few different definitions of wisdom in Judaism. Let's see. What do we got? How do we define Chachma? I'll let you quote a pasuk or a mishnah. There we go. That's going to be a mishnah later on. What? Haroas and Olad. Another mishnah later on. Right. So we have two mishnayos and avos. Roas and Olad. Lo min mikal adam. There's a pasuk. Reish is chachma. Yeres Hashem. So zesha kana chachma might mean those who have Yerushalayim. You want to give Torah to the people who have the sense of Yerushalayim, who are going to know what to do with it. They're going to know how to cherish it and how to treat it. And then Zekenim Levim, Levim, Nesrul, Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Hey, Mamre Shlosh Advarim. We got 2 minutes, so let's do this mission. Hey, Mamre Shlosh Advarim. So they said three things. And you can have a lot of sets of three in Pirkei Avos. So what you always want to try to do when you have a set of three is figure out what the connection is between the three, or how the three relate to the same theme or topic. Have a Mesunim Bedin, be deliberate in judgment, not quick to judge. Veheemidu talmidim harbe, you should have a lot of students, or literally stand up a lot of students. Vaasus yag leTorah, and make a fence around the Torah. Okay, for extra credit, what do those three things have in common? So you could suggest any number of answers, probably. I was just thinking as I was reading it, that if the theme is Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, we want to identify those midos that are critical to achieving in Torah, to being able to excel in Torah. So number one, patience. Have Mesunim Bedin. That if you're just going to try to read through it and just get through it, you're going to miss the beauty of Torah, you're going to miss the majesty of Torah, and more importantly, you're going to miss the nuance of Torah. And a lot of times there are nuances that will change everything, that will change your whole understanding of everything. So have a Mesunim Bedin. Be patient when you learn. Be patient in your assessment of a topic of Torah. Let it simmer in your mind for a little bit. When you learn Torah, it shouldn't just be, you know, in these 30 minutes that we're here together that you're learning. Think about this Mishnah later on. Let it simmer in your mind, and you'll see new ideas will pop into your head. You'll think of a new angle. You'll think of something else. That's how people are mechadesh in Torah. It's not from the moments that they're sitting in the Beis Medrash. The greatest chidushim in Torah come when people are lying in their bed at night, when people are walking down the street, when their mind is preoccupied with Torah. Dr. Tova Lichtenstein said about her father, Rav Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha, that, you know, unlike the stories you hear about most Gedolei Torah, he had a very normal schedule. He slept normal hours, he ate normal hours, but he was always thinking and learning. he couldn't drive anymore because he was always like distracted. He would miss every exit. They say that about Rabbi Kelmer Zatzal, that Rabbi Kelmer would like, he'd go out to get some milk and he'd come back like 12 hours later. there's certain special tzaddikim and tzaddikaniyos like that. I think Rabbi Tzimudin said that she sent out her husband wants to go buy some meat or something from the store, and he came back with three Israelis for the Seder. how did that happen? I just sent them out for. So, but Rabbi Musuna Bedin, right? I don't remember how we got there. Rabbi Musuna Bedin, you should be patient and deliberate and think about it. Oh, let it simmer in your mind. V'emizu talmidim harbe. I think this is the most obvious one. You don't really get to decide how many talmidim you have. Even when I teach in yeshiva, the talmidim decide which year they want to go to. And there are some Rosh Yeshiva who are brilliant talmidei chacham, have like two guys in their shir. And you know what? In 5 years from now, they'll have 80 guys in their shir. And then 5 years later, they may be back down to two, because people are fickle like that. And it's wherever talmidim vote with their feet. You don't really get to decide how many talmidim you have. But amidei talmidim harbe means, if you want to excel in Torah, you have to have people to share it with, who are going to question you, who are going to challenge you, and only then, only when you're challenged, are you really going to excel in Torah. Va'asus yag l'Torah, to make a fence around the Torah means to cherish the Torah. What do you build a fence around? That which you want to protect, that which you value the most. Va'asus yag l'Torah, so it certainly means to protect the Torah by making dinim d'rabanan, but you only want to make dinim d'rabanan, you're going to say, oh, don't eat dairy after meat for 6 hours, because it's such a high value for me not to eat dairy and meat that are cooked together. So we're going to make these extra fences because this is so precious. I don't want to ever dare violate the Torah because I cherish it so much. So okay, that's the first. I wasn't planning on doing my Mishnah. I was actually planning on doing the whole parak, but we'll see how it goes. I guess that was the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Everyone have a wonderful evening and a wonderful Shabbos. Yeah.